peacekeeping has been a central part of Canada's international relations over the last half a century. In Montreal, a new exhibition at the Canadian Centre for Architecture, The Good Cause, presents a critical installation on peacekeeping in 2011. Fabrizio Galanti of the Canadian Centre for Architecture speaks on the current exhibition, showing until fall 2011 in Montreal. In this interview, we look at the exhibition's critique on the UN peacekeeping process since World War II via architectural reflections on space, while highlighting alternatives to the increasingly militarized peacekeeping process internationally. Looking critically at peacekeeping, peacekeeping isn't monolithic. There's many different applications of what we call peacekeeping. You mentioned something very interesting, which was the idea of a dead peace. In peacekeeping, whereas the military force is preventing conflict, but the roots of the conflict haven't been solved. So maybe just if you could expand a bit on the different themes and the different realities that you hoped to project with this exhibition.
Well, the idea is in a way to display this kind of opposition in nature existing between what the international community is conventionally thinking about what peace should be, and instead some actions that have been taken from a more bottom level within communities that would prove that there are other ways to engage into peace. So there are two main topics. One topic is about timing, and one topic is about the reconstruction of civil confidence. So what negative peace is considered also in the military documents is the idea that you have an external military force coming in a territory, blocking the confrontation that might be between different countries or in a civil war condition between gangs. I mean, the situations are very different. And then in that moment, normally you have a very high attention of the international community, the media, the ONG, the big ONG, the big international ONG, that put a lot of focus and energy on that specific moment. But then after a while, normally the attention will be shifted somewhere else, a new earthquake, a new hurricane, a new conflict. And it is exactly when it is instead much needed to invent and articulate more complex strategies to really reconstruct the civil fabric of a society. So normally what we do at the CCA, or what architects like to be doing, is to consider like the physicality of some case studies as revealing of more complex topics. So really like working at a kind of like space detectives, the traces of things that you see in a territory are revealing of probably more articulated things. So we have identified three cases that are just three examples of these negative peace effects. One is Kabul, one is in Sudan, and one is in Pristina. In the case of Kabul, it is the fact that because of the location of embassies, military compounds, and ONG seats, basically the whole city is fortified. It's a walled city where the circulation of the international personnel is completely separated from the daily life of the inhabitants of Kabul. So you have a system of walls, concrete barriers, blockades that really generate a kind of like alternative geography. In the case of Sudan, it is really like a visual manifestation of the compounds of the United Nations help agencies, that in a way they really become fortified units that are in no way different from the military bases within the territory. So there is really this incapacity of communication on a local level. The rules and regulations that United Nations are more and more defining to protect the safety of the workers are such that in the end they really create separated and secluded compounds in the territory where they are located. So if you are a worker of the United Nations, to avoid to be in a way exposed to danger, in the end you end up living behind walled fortresses, moving in armored SUVs. So you really have this kind of like separated life. So you are really like shipped in for a short period of time, apparently to be solving problems, and then leaving the place, and you really, in a way, are engaged in a very faraway life with the local condition.
Well, I would imagine, I mean, just in an architectural sense, the physicality of the United Nations installation speaks a lot to the disconnected reality between the process of peacekeeping on an official level and the actual conflict.
Well, the exhibition opens, we have a kind of like introductory room that is very almost like naked with very few elements. So there is a descriptive text where mainly we streamlined kind of like explanation of what is the exhibition about. And we have two pictures that are outside the gallery space, which is a kind of intimate space. And one is showing a mission from the Marines in Afghanistan trying to recover a building occupied by the Taliban. So it is a typical scene that you would see in a Hollywood movie, you know, with Marines heavily armed and entering one of these places. And the other one, it's UN United Nations peace compound in Congo. And the two images are exactly the same. The kind of visualization of the kind of like space, people, activity are in no way different. So this is a first statement about the fact that more and more peacekeeping missions, they tend to obliterate the difference between the pre-existing conflict situation and the actual suspension of conflict. Mm. And the third topic is that normally when you have a kind of conflict, at the end of one conflict, there is in general a lack of civil administration and civil organization, which generally leads to phenomena of informal settlements, illegal construction. There is the return of the refugees and the return of the expatriates that in a way invest heavily in the reconstruction. And we saw that a lot in all the Balkan, after the Balkan Wars, which also generates problems, because it generates problems of unsafety, problems of like illegality, illegal economies. So these are the three manifestations that we identified of this kind of negative peace. Mm-hmm. Also, what has to be taken into account are the processes that are behind the construction of peace, in a way. So it is a kind of like a constellation of actors and subjects that are located on the territory. So you have governments, you have international organization, military and civil, and then you have sub-governments of the municipal level, and then you have like economical interests that are coming back. So in a way, there is all this complicated landscape. So this kind of information is conveyed through data and maps on the walls of the gallery. The gallery, for those who can come and see it in Montreal, it's a kind of close and intimate space, and it is meant to be thought as a research lab where visitors can touch things, can move them, can use them, because we have then six tables upon which instead we put examples of practices that we felt are exemplary of a different way of constructing peace. Okay. When normally there is a totally different narrative. So there is this kind of clear opposition between a more formal condition on the wall and a more informal condition on the tables.
Before we get into the second element of the exhibition, just back to the United Nations and the peacekeeping process. This is a huge part of Canada's national identity in terms of how people identify Canada in the world within our own borders. It's part of the constructed national narrative, is this concept of peacekeeping. So I'm just wondering, why was it important to present this critique in Canada?
I think in general, many of the CCA exhibition, they like to portray themselves as question producers. The idea is that people would come here and not always leave the place with a kind of comforted idea, but maybe with some open questions. So when we decided to make the exhibition on the Second World War, the idea was that through the case studies and historical examples, we would have been questioning what is the responsibility and role of architecture in general towards society. In the Second World War, we saw that all society was put at work. And in the exhibition, you see the most horrible war criminals being architects, but as well as the prisoners of the camps. So you have a very extended array of kind of like a role of architects and architecture. So we thought we should also touch that topic on a more contemporary level. And it really came out of a dialogue with the NIE. And I also know, and we also know that also the Dutch community has been heavily involved in peacekeeping missions. So I think the kind of like generation of this joint topic between Holland and Canada is probably revealing of a kind of like, you know, kind of unconscious attitude that in general this country have had in the past. So how do you place yourself on a geopolitical map when you are not superpowers, but you also want to play in the kind of political arena internationally? And both countries have been heavily, in a way, involved in peacekeeping missions. So the idea was to at least to put on the table the idea that there are multiple options and multiple, in a way, potentials in this activity. It is not, again, it is not saying that peacekeeping missions are bad, but it's rather saying that we should consider them on a broader perspective and understand which are the consequences and But the perspective of understanding which are the consequences, which are the questions at stake, which are the potentials, you know, a concretization on the territory. And in fact, in September, we'll have a two-day screening with the ONF about, more specifically, about peacekeeping mission movies, documentaries, where the Canadian forces are very much the kind of protagonists. One is about Congo, and then there is a second screening about the peacekeeping missions of Canadian forces in former Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. So the topic would be, in a way, to manifest a kind of like more general understanding. There is a very interesting data that if you see which are the main contributors in terms of soldiers to the peacekeeping mission, we don't see the Western forces, we don't see Canada, we don't see the US, we don't see France, we don't see Italy, we don't see any other kind of, we see Pakistan, Bangladesh, India, Nigeria. So it is interesting how, in a way, there is a kind of like decision level that is taken generally in the Security Council of the United Nations, but then the workforce is not provided by, let's say, these countries, which I think it's also saying a lot about the kind of like general geopolitical equilibrium.
On the exhibition walls, you have a couple of global maps, and one of them, I remember, is an outline of the world's conflicts and the people who have died in those conflicts. I mean, striking numbers, of course, are Iran, over 1 million during the Iran-Iraq War, mainly Congo, forgotten conflict in a large in a sense, not talked about in the media. Over 4 million have died in the Congo. Of course, Lebanon is there. The civil war, conflicts around the world. I guess my question for you would be: is when you see this map and you can see kind of the conflicts mainly throughout the global south laid out for you. And then this whole concept about peacekeeping, which really developed after the Second World War through the United Nations, if you contrast the conflicts themselves and these wars and the overarching goals of peacekeeping as projected by the United Nations, there seems to be a contrast between the ability for peace to be kept, yes. as it were.
Well, the two maps are the result of a very long process of editing and data collection that was run by NIE, ARCHIS, that is this foundation in Amsterdam, and us. So we had to establish some kind of like rules of the game to control the information. The first one, although was not totally convincing to us, was a kind of very cynical benchmark of how many dead were in the war. So we established that the quantity at 1,000. Because there has been more symbolic and significant conflict that strangely produced less casualties, like the Grenada invasion from Reagan government was below that benchmark. So in a way, it's out of the calculation. The Falkland War was also slightly below that, so we don't have that in the map. Then there is a question that I think is interesting about the length and duration of some of these conflicts. There seem to be some conflicting conditions that have been lasting for 40 or 45 years in a way. And if you confront that map, that is by no chance black and white, very like simple visual idea of manifesting kind of grim nature of this kind of permanent war conflict that we're living in with the other map, you also realize that in some situations the peacekeeping missions are there for a very long period of time, and it is in a way also the expression that without international juxtaposition forces, it would be very likely that that this conflict would be exploding again and being again in a way in full speed. What probably says also the map is that there is some neglected wars in a way where probably the United Nations is not a neutral element. So if you consider superpowers, economical interests, the global capitalist forces and economy, there are surely places where it is worth investing in a way money, resources and people to try to stop the conflict. And some others that are beyond or outside of the radar of international attention that you in a way can very cynically maintain the slaughter going on without too much preoccupation. And this is something that the two maps are saying. Also, if one comes back also to the, like more recent examples, if we consider how long it took to have, for instance, a military intervention to stop the destruction of Sarajevo, and you compare that long period of time of, in a way, very debated decision by NATO whether to strike or not, and you compare that to the quickness of the intervention in Libya now, you start to have some kind of like an understanding why Libya, yes, and why Syria, nothing is happening. And of course, we know that it's because of other interests that are less pure and less, in a way, morally acceptable than the one that apparently seemed to be in the forefront of these decisions.
Well, I guess we could look at, in a sense, the political utilization of peacekeeping in the world.
Yes, I think it is not a neutral subject. It is subjected, well, the same constituency of the United Nations Security Council is very much complicated to still believe it is representing contemporary world. So you have the fixed members are still the winners of the Second World War. There is a rotation system where countries like Brazil, India, they enter and exit this kind of Security Council. You still have the veto of the former members. So in a way, it is a kind of asymmetrical organization of the world power that is still in place now. And we also know that these countries, they also represent far larger interests where corporations, industrial interests, economical interests are in a way mingled and intertwined. So I think there is not kind of like still, also the title of the exhibition is a little bit a kind of ironic, not ironic, but self-critical, The Good Cause. Because generally the way the decision to launch a peacekeeping mission is always based on this idea of a just cause, a good cause, a kind of international justice idea. But we've been seeing the past of this concept have been in a way stretched and used in very different ways.
You have been listening to an interview with Fabrizio Galanti of the Canadian Centre for Architecture in Montreal, speaking on their current exhibition, The Good Cause, showing until fall 2011 in Montreal, an exhibition working to critique the UN peacekeeping process since World War II via architectural reflections on space, highlighting alternatives to the increasingly militarized peacekeeping process. For more information on the Good Cause exhibition and the Canadian Centre for Architecture, visit www.cca.qc.ca. That's www.cca.qc.ca. This interview was produced at CKUT Radio, for broadcast on campus and community radio stations globally by Stefan Christophe.